Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show. What's up, y'all? I cannot wait to share this conversation with you, as I had the privilege to chat with a guy who has four NBA titles, two NBA MVPs, and a Finals MVP to his name. He's also a stick on the celebrity golf circuit, and he is playing in the match tonight at 6:30 Eastern on TNT. I am speaking, of course, of Steph Curry. Such a fun chat with Steph. We talked about his recent week at Cypress Point, how his college career at Davidson might have looked different in the era of NIL, and he confirms the hilarious details of an interaction between Jordan Spieth and President Obama. Let's get right to it. Here's Steph Curry. All right, Steph, you're a busy man, and I appreciate you taking the time to join The Smiley Show, and you're in Las Vegas currently for the match. It's one I love to watch, and I'm looking forward to watching you guys. We're going to get into that here in a little bit. But last weekend, man, you were at Cypress Point. The internet's kind of picked up a little bit on you playing with Butch Harmon. And I'm curious, man, if you're working with Butch Harmon, is the celebrity golf circuit, do they need to be put on notice?
I would say yes for the prep that I'm doing, not just for the match, but also my favorite week of the year when we go up to the top, Lake Tahoe, and play
yes.
the Century. So I'm trying to win that one. I'm trying to win both of these, but I'm trying to win that one for sure. I finished like tied for third a couple times, so I'm like right there. So Butch gave me some tips, working with my guy Alex Riggs to give me some pointers, and we're working on our game. So the one thing that I'm figuring out is, one, this basketball just keeps getting in the way of me really hitting my stride. But I think it's interesting for the athletes that have, you know, excelled in other sports to learn how to learn golf, if that makes sense. So in terms of, like, you know, putting swing thoughts together or whatever you're trying to work on, and actually see yourself improve, because it's not necessarily an easy thing to do, or just, you know, duplicate. You can't just work harder and try harder and it click in golf. At least that's my experience. So to answer your question, yes, they should be well noticed, because I'm feeling really good about my game right now.
Well, what did Butch tell you?
You know, Butch, they say he's not a swing coach, he's a golf psychologist. So I feel like it was just more keeping things simple for me. It was, as a basketball player, I like to be on my toes a lot and like real react.
Yeah.
And when you're on your toes and you're kind of doing that, you don't really get to turn much, or you're limiting your turn. Mm-hmm. For me, that was a big trouble spot in my game, especially the long game and tee shots and stuff. He's like, just turn. Like, you can't turn too little, like, or too much, I should say. He said, you can't turn too much, like, exaggerate it in your practice swings, and then you'll do 80-90% of that in your regular swing, and that should be good enough. So
let's go, man.
Trying to dial that in.
Man, that hip turn, we're going to see that live on TV with the match. I can't wait to watch you.
You're gonna see
sending bombs out there.
A real obnoxious pre-swing routine, like just sitting that way.
Oh, man. Well, I want to hear more about this weekend at Cypress Point. It's like a place that, if you've never played it, it's the place everybody always wants to go to. I imagine that event, it's incredible. It's called The Hook and Eye. It's only 40 members and 40 guests. It's a very exclusive event. And typically in the Friday practice round, you play with Tom Brady, play against Charlie Hume, my producer and co-host, his granddad, Sam Reeves, and Ed Hurley. And so this year you play with Butch. What was the result of that match against those two guys on Friday?
I feel like you already know the answer to this question. It's a true setup to how bad me and Butch got beat by Ed and Sam. So I want to say it's home course cooking, home course advantage. And Sam gave an amazing speech at one of the dinners. And I think he embellished the final result just a little bit. He said that they beat us 6-5. I'm going to go with 4-3, respectively.
Well, my notes say 5-4. So, so we might have to meet in the middle and go with 5-4. Anyways, that was a beatdown. And I actually have a quote from Sam Reason. He's a legend. This actually quote was more about you and Tom whenever you guys go up against them. He said, "The thing that is so endearing about Steph and Tom is when they tee off, they really think they actually stand a chance."
And I love that line because I'm definitely going to use that in the match too. So it's going to be beautiful for Travis.
Oh, there you go, man. You got to learn how to talk.
That wisdom's being handed down. So definitely.
You got to learn how to talk in those things. And so you play with Doug McKenzie in the actual event. It says you hit her. This is just from sources that I had. It says you hit 16 of 18 greens. Couldn't make anything. Shot 72, 74. How'd you think he played?
I was turning, as Butch would say, I was turning.
Okay.
I was hitting the ball. So it's one of those, like, everybody's asking, how'd you play and this and that? I don't know. As a professional golfer, like, you've played countless rounds. How you feel when you hit the ball so good and, like, whatever you're working on is working, but you just don't have anything to show for it at the end because you couldn't make putts. I was, like, smiling ear to ear because of how good I hit it and made one birdie the entire day.
That's how golf goes, right?
I loved it because I hadn't had that experience before where, like, I know where the ball is going. I'm hitting every green, giving yourself a chance. And then I guess I was just being an optimist. Like, if I could just keep doing this, just keep doing that, then I'll make some putts eventually. So we'll see in the match, see if I can put it all together.
What's the old saying? Is it good shooters keep shooting? Is that the old adage?
Something to that effect. And we, whether it's a good shot or bad shot, we got amnesia as a good shooter. You got to just move on to the next.
So. I love it. Keep hitting those greens. Definitely that putter will get hot. Hopefully tomorrow for you in Las Vegas. But one of the cool events that Sam Reeves, Charlie's granddad, started at Cypress is one club challenge. So it's the seventh hole. It's a par three. Eighth hole is like this little short dogleg right par four. That's a really kind of risk reward type hole for me. I'm being a long guy. And then the eighth hole is kind of a drivable par four. What club did you pick? And I see you played with Augusta National chairman Fred Ridley and lost by a couple shots, but I'm curious what club you picked considering it's par three, short par four, drivable par four.
So I think I picked a 7-iron. Chairman Ridley picked a 6-iron. I went with 7 because I can hit it, I can hit it far enough where, well, this is the other part. It's a one club challenge and your whole goal is to just don't lose the ball. Like, you just find a way to get through, those three holes without losing
the ball. Wait, are you out if you lose the ball?
Yeah, you're out. You might as well just hopefully you bring some beers and some drinks because you got a long walk back to Mr. Reeves' house. But so the pressure of playing with Chairman Ridley, the ninth tee box is the first shot. So it's kind of a little downhill. And the landing area is not that big, considering it's a fairway.
It is with a 7-iron.
7-iron. kind of blocked it right. And I was mad and I told Chairman Ridley, like, I had one job and that was, not to get your shoes dirty while we were out here. And I had him sitting ankle high in the dunes looking for, a smooth Callaway Chrome Soft X. So he found it, though. We got through the three holes. But 7-iron for me was the kind of pick to hit some long shots. I could open it up if I wanted to chip around the green and stuff like that.
Yeah, so yeah.
It was fun.
Well, that sounds like an incredible event. And you actually did win something. You won the long drive. So you at least took home some hardware.
They might as well just rename that after me. That has made time.
Yeah, who's your competition in that?
This year it was, usually Tom, when he's coming down for the tournament, he can hit the long ball. And then Larry Fitzgerald's the other guy. So I think I got Larry by 3 yards on my last attempt. And they said that I was dealing with 20-mile-an-hour winds, headwinds. He had a pretty benign playing conditions for his part of the long drive festivity. So that 3 yards was a little deflated, if you ask me.
Well, man, it sounds like an incredible weekend. Anytime you go to Cyprus, it's a fun week. But so you grew up, I want to know, when did you start playing golf, and was it a family activity growing up for you?
Yeah, I started young. I'm like probably around 10 years old. My dad, he grew up in near Harrisonburg, Virginia. He was kind of, you know, hunter, fisherman, didn't really know about golf growing up. And when he got into the NBA, he needed a summer hobby and kind of started to pick it up in his off seasons. And so me and my brother and even my sister, we just watch him, you know, tinkering with stuff in the garage. He'd have a new set like every other week. It was kind of like, what is this golf thing? And then we used to drive the golf cart and run around with like a little, cut down putter and mess around the greens. And then I fell in love with it from there and took lessons for 2 weeks to kind of understand the fundamentals and get a good foundation, mm-hmm. and just kept playing. So, high school or middle school and high school, I was the kid that obviously loved basketball. When I started high school, the basketball was the only sport I played, but once the off season, like you play high school basketball and it ends in March, in between, I was trying to go out for the golf team, and I was the kid that my parents would drop me off at Charlotte Golf Links, a couple minutes down the street from my house, 8 a.m., come pick me up, 6 p.m., I'm going to be out there all day type vibe. So I was obsessed from the jump for sure.
I love it, man. You're a grinder. And you talked about you put so much time into basketball, but so when you got to college – and kind of the early part of the NBA, did you kind of have to put the clubs away, or were you always still, bringing the clubs out when you could?
Well, first, when I got to college, I said I played 3 years on my high school golf team, and I wasn't great, but like I could compete. And I also, in the back of my head, was like, well, I don't really practice either. So maybe, if I could spend a little bit more time. And the NBA was always on my radar in terms of, that was a goal and I was working. Mm-hmm. Tirelessly to make that happen, but you need a little break. So I thought, I was so naive. I thought I signed up to go to Davidson College, and it was a small Division I school. I was like, maybe I can walk on their golf team, in our basketball off season and try to hang out with, hang with those guys. Little did I know that right after our NCAA tournament game, my freshman year, we lost to Maryland, and everybody's upset and down that the season's over with. And in the back of my mind, I was like, maybe I got to go to the golf coach's, office and, see if there's any walk-on spots. And Coach McKillop, who's our head coach on the basketball team, he looks at our whole team and is like, all right, guys, tough loss, but, take 10 days off and we're back in the gym getting ready for next season. I was like,
right back, man.
So,
never sleeps.
I was away in college for sure. But now in the NBA, I get hopefully 2 or 3 rounds a month in. Coach Kerr, he kind of encourages if we do have a break in the schedule to go play. He knows how good it is for the mind, body, and the soul. So it's part of Warrior culture too.
Will you ever play on the day of a game, or is it always like an off day?
I've only done it once in my career.
I feel like my legs would just be gone.
Yeah, that's always the fear. And obviously I'm not messing around with I've heard stories about Michael and
I know that's what I'm thinking is MJ in my head. He played 36 holes. I'm like,
there's no, like, he's just, I mean, obviously he's superhuman in that respect. And, he could, just had his routine that worked for him, but I've tried it once. It was like a game in Phoenix, a break started. So I felt like I could experiment a little bit. The sad part is my legs were tired. They were heavy. I could feel it. But I also had one of the better shooting games of the season that night. So it was like the mixture of I had filled my cup up and had so much fun out there on the course. But I knew if I tried to do that, once a week or every game, there's no chance. So
it's just not possible.
The one and done. The one and done.
Okay, there it is. Speaking of, you kind of mentioned Davidson and one and done. So you went to Davidson and, I think part of your charm is the Cinderella story that you kind of, came from a small school and eventually became one of the biggest superstars that basketball has seen in this generation. I'm curious, what do you think your college career would have been like now in this era of NIL?
It's a great question. I think, honestly, it would have been very similar because I was a late bloomer. So it wasn't like I would have been in a situation coming out of high school. I was a three-star recruit, wasn't really heavily recruited. And so I feel like my journey would have been similar until my sophomore year. And that's when I probably, my head would have been spinning in terms of what the new reality was. Because even back then in 2008, like social media was kind of, you know, starting to take off, which is obviously, you know, it's what, 15 years ago now.
Doesn't seem like that long ago.
And so like there was a big reaction to our story, like my platform in the microscope around me, it was growing like crazy and I could feel it, but I still had like a humble beginning of, you know, having a normal, you know, college experience. It was being just one of the student athletes that was on campus and us trying to figure it out. So the NIL money would not have been flowing through the Davidson basketball locker room. Like there would have been, hey coach, I'm gonna be a little late for practice. I gotta go do my, you know, used car salesman commercial. It would have been none of that. But after our tournament run, like it would have been probably really tempting to, you know, go into the transfer portal, maybe.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm curious about is like, would the transfer portal, would that have been an option for you? Like, would we have seen you that third year go somewhere else and play? Like, because you at that time, you would have to transfer. You have to go sit out and wait a year. And that's not an option for a guy who's right on the doorstep of the NBA.
Yeah, nah, it would have been a conversation for sure, just to kind of take, you know, your draft stock and think about, you know, all the things that these kids today have to kind of, you know, navigate. The one thing that, you know, I do know is that Davidson was just such a perfect fit for me and who I was and how I played and a coach that kind of believed in me and I could grow with and I trust. And so though that probably would have been a conversation just because, you know, that was what the circumstances were, I highly doubt that, you know, in an alternate universe, I would have ever left just because of how much I love my experience there. You know, how good the fit was, how much I trusted coach and the fact that, you know, we were playing against all those, you know, big Division I power conference schools anyway. And so I probably would have stayed, but I probably would have had a busier, you know, junior year with all the other opportunities that are now, you know, rightfully so in front of these highly capable student athletes.
Yeah. And so those, when you get to the NBA and those early years with the Warriors and, you know, you're losing a good amount of games, you have injuries yourself you're dealing with. I myself know what it's like to go through times of struggle with injuries and how that affects, for me, my golf game, and everything just seemed out of sync and confidence isn't quite there. I'm curious for you, how are you kind of able to keep the faith really in that time period and see really the light at the end of the tunnel?
It's hard, man. Like you said, you go through it. Those are some lonely days, some lonely times, because it's so outside of your control. Like you're so used to being in a situation where the ability to be available in whatever your sport is and just be able to be consumed by the process of getting better and enjoying the competition and all that. When you have injuries or down times in your career, like it's a lonely feeling because all you want to do is just be able to do the thing that you love and that you put so many hours in. One, you got to have a good circle around you. It's very important. You got to have, you know, that support that's, you know, able to lean on. And at the end of the day, I think it's obviously motivation to, you know, be very disciplined and detailed about whatever the rehab process are, what the hard work that you have to put in to get back to the person and the athlete that you know you want to be. But there's a lot of faith in it too, because you don't know how long that process is going to take. And I think it's an interesting journey that everybody would probably have a similar experience who's been in that place in life.
And I'm looking forward to watching that doc. Is it a documentary on Apple TV? That looks like it's going to be kind of telling a little bit of that story that you just kind of talked about.
It's cool. It's you know, July 21st coming out on Apple TV Plus. Gotta get the plug in there.
Hold on, I'm gonna update my notes just to make sure I got an alarm set. I'm gonna be watching that. I'm gonna be right ready for that one.
Stephen Curry underrated. It's weird saying your name in the title of a documentary, but it's the origin story of that team. And kind of my journey to get there, all the experiences and connections and people that were part of you know, those magical 3 years, and then kind of where it's kind of taken me from there. But it's wild. There's a lot of footage of stuff that nobody's really seen before in terms of, one, how I was a freshman. I looked like I was 12 years old.
Hey, man, me and you, baby face.
That's why I can't let this go. It literally took me 30 years to grow this. I wanted it so bad. But it speaks to, you know, just perseverance and work ethic and, you know, having people believe in you and speak, you know, speak that vision into you, and just the patience to be able to go through those processes and trust yourself that you're going to get to the ultimate goal that you want to get to. So I'm excited about it. Should be good for everybody to see.
Now I'm looking forward to watching, man. And you know, we always think of the highs with athletes, and we think they don't ever have struggles, and that's just not true for anybody. And so I think that'll be a really nice way to kind of see what you went through. And if I told you in 2012 that you'd go on to win 4 championships and 2 MVP awards, would you have believed me?
Probably not. It's crazy. No, just because like you said, I knew that I belonged in the NBA, but it was just one of those situations where all you wanted to do was be healthy and have an opportunity. And if I just got that, I would have been satisfied, because that's how, you know, dark those days were for a while. So definitely blessed. God's been good to me. The opportunity to, you know, again, do what I love and have, you know, accomplished some amazing heights in this game. And the fact that I think the more thing is like that you're talking almost 11, 12 years later, and I still feel like I'm right, you know, in my prime and trying to, you know, sustain this level of play. That's one of the most things I'm proud of based on, you know, how everything started in my career.
All right. So this is a question that we kind of always ask golfers when we're playing practice rounds. It's like, hey, who would be the starting five if we had a PGA Tour NBA team? Like who's filling that lineup out?
Wait, I'm picking NBA guys.
Yeah. NBA guys.
Ooh, good question. So current NBA guys, I'm going to have to narrow this down.
Yeah. I mean, current would be great, right? I think that's,
I'm going Seth Curry.
So you're picking bro. Okay.
Yeah, I'm picking bro. I'm picking, Pat Connaughton at the 2. I hear he's solid out there. I haven't actually him, but when your reputation is kind of
now, I'm sure there's a lot of talk going around who the best players in the league are.
Yeah. We're going to have a really small team, by the way, because I don't know. You're taking Kyle Lowry. You're taking Klay Thompson, and you're taking Andre Iguodala.
Iggy, that's the heart and soul of that lineup right there.
Absolutely.
That guy loves playing him some golf. Man. All right. So this is kind of a question we ask for really anybody that's not a golfer. Well, you are a golfer, but not a professional golfer. It's what is the biggest shot you've made in an NBA game versus the best golf shot you've ever hit in a tournament setting, and which one felt better?
There's okay. So
I'm going to see how big of a golf nut you are right here.
I know. biggest shot I've made. Nobody really is going to probably think this is worthy of what I'm about to say, but it was from 2015. Game 5 of the NBA finals. And it was one of the second 3 I hit in the across from Cleveland's bench. It was a little 3 crossover move, step back 3, like late in the fourth quarter. It's probably like, I don't know if it was 2 or 3 minutes left somewhere in there, but it was like kind of a dagger that got us over the hump to win game 5. And then we went on to win game 6 of your first NBA championship. So that's just a moment of like, you don't know if you can get there. And for me, that was kind of a big dagger shot that, you know, gave us some life. And I remember that just because it helped us, you know, win our first championship. And then in golf.
Tournament setting. So one that's like pressure's on.
I played in the, was it 2017, I think. It was the Korn Ferry Tour at the time.
Yes.
No, it was Corn Ferry now. What am I talking about?
It's I don't know. I played on the web.com when it was going. So I always end up calling it the web.com. So
that's what it was. The proceed. Web.com tour in Hayward, California at TPC Stonebray.
Yep.
I got a sponsor's exemption at the LA May Classic, and I was playing with Steven Yeager and Sam Ryder. In
two guys still playing on tour.
On the tour. And it's the first round. And I ended up shooting 74, but it was the hole 17, which I've played that course plenty of times in the non-tournament setting as my least favorite hole in the course, because I just have never performed well on it. And I knew coming down the stretch, like, if I just get through this hole, like I might shoot a number here.
Yeah.
So I drop kicked one in the fairway with a driver. I literally drop kicked it about 260 down the hill.
You should try to get it to the house.
And then my second shot, it was like a 9-iron, and it was dead eye on the stick, and it actually smacked the stick.
Oh.
Right down like the base of the stick, but it had enough juice on it that it bounced and then kind of spun back towards the hole and stopped.
I think I remember seeing that.
Yeah, they got the video on the YouTube and all that. So it was like just that moment, because of all the circumstances, my first time playing in a tournament. And my caddy, Johnny West, who was on the bag with me at the time, he's got the audio while the ball's in there. Oh, be as good as you look, that type of vibe. And smacks the flag stick. I ended up make birdie and shoot a really decent, respectable score out there and with all the Corn Ferry guys. So
you did, man. That was incredible. I'm honestly, so you're talking about 17 and you don't like that hole and you end up hitting an unbelievable shot. And so the pressure was on. You're like, I got to get to the house. What for you, the difference between pressure on a golf course where it's quiet, you know, you're very much in your own thoughts and how you get to the finish line versus basketball. Yes, got to get to the finish line, but it's a very loud arena and it's very chaotic. And it's not just you, you have other teammates. So it's two different deals, but the pressure in how you perform is still the same.
Oh, 100%. Those quiet times on the bench in between timeouts or whether it's a dead ball, there's a lot of inner dialogue going on. And when I get nervous on the golf course, it's the same thing, whether it's in between shots or whether it's over the ball, when you're trying not to think of anything, but you feel the moment. It's just positive self-talk. Like, it sounds so simple, but it really is just reminding yourself, like, oh, why are you nervous? Or, you know, oh, you've hit this shot plenty of times, or, you know, kind of just embracing, you know, the magnitude of the moment. And all that self-dialogue is so, it takes a while. You have to train yourself how to do it, because the mind can be very negative at times without kind of controlling it. So I do that in basketball a lot. I remember in the finals last year, like, there's just a lot of, like, just be great conversation to yourself and a lot of different ways that you talk about it and kind of get yourself going. So that's the biggest similarity for me, just to be able to kind of ground yourself no matter what the situation is, because it doesn't necessarily come naturally. You have to kind of work on it.
Yeah, positivity. And for me, when I was playing on tour, some of the best advice really I got was to, when things got tough, to run your routine. Just focus on that, like, run that routine. And that's something, when I go practice and I would spend hours and hours and hours, I would focus on my routine. And then from there, I would work on being, like, creative and then build myself up with confidence. And when I watch, like, your pre-warm-up routine that they'll show on pre-game on TNT, and I kind of see similarities where you kind of do your block practice, kind of do your random practice, and then you do all your creativity stuff where you always leave the arena or the court on a make, just to give you that extra bit of, I can do this, I can make any shot.
It's a big part of it. You said it well. I can't really add anything to it. It is about, you know, falling in love with the process of what you do, how you do it. There's always tinkering. There's always a little bit of adjusting based on what's going on, but that's something you rely on heavily, you know, from year to year, from game to game. It kind of puts you in the right zone. It builds your confidence up to see what you're trying to do out there, you know, on the court. It's something that will sometimes, you know, kind of highlight anything, any adjustments I might need to make mechanically, just because you have the volume that comes with it. but it's a non-negotiable. Like I have to go through that process in order to get my mind and body ready for the game. And if I don't, then you always feel kind of a little out of whack. So that process has developed over years. And it's something where through all of that, I try to have as much fun as possible. Like it can't be work. It'll feel like that at times. It'll feel like the grind. There's days that obviously it comes a little easier than others, but I try to bring joy to it because, you know, you're in that space so many times and you don't want to ever, you know, lose, you know, that love of, like you said, the creativity part. That's where that creativity comes from.
That's the fun part.
I'm actually like so present in the moment that, I'm enjoying myself that stuff kind of oozes out of you. So it's a big piece to what you need to do to be successful for sure.
And so often people think, when they see guys win on really anywhere, but the PGA Tour specifically, when I won, I didn't have my A stuff, but the days I was off, I had these quick adjustments that I was able to make my stuff more like B stuff. And you kind of just talked about adjustments that you make on the floor. What are those quick fixes for you on nights that you just don't really have it?
It could be as simple as, you know, let's run a different play call to get you in a better position on the floor. It could be something mechanically like
when you get a little off, where do you get?
Like feeling which fingers the ball is rolling off of.
Wow. Sometimes that's specific finger.
Yeah. Sometimes it happens naturally with how much you groove your shot. But when it's off, you have to kind of remind yourself what's the factors that could get the ball moving left to right or short long. And usually it's, you know, what fingers is the ball rolling off when you release. The biggest one for me and the most consistent one is I start shooting the ball flat. So the little knockdown punch niners and little flat ones into the wind. That's what my ball looks like instead of the high Rory McIlroy, you know, bombs to the sky, which obviously on the basketball court, that's what you need. So when I start getting flat, that's when my consistency goes, you know, in the dumps, and you have to kind of get that arc going, get the ball spinning the right way. And so those are the things you kind of think about. You don't want to consume yourself with that though, because it should, you know, be when you're out there on the court, it should come naturally. It should be kind of, you know, thoughtless when it comes to, you know, in-game action, but there's always ways to kind of tinker a little bit.
Yes. C shot, hit shot. That's kind of the old adage there. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but your brother is my full-time shooting coach with the basketball. I actually played all the way through high school. We won a state championship my junior year.
Hey, you got something I don't have right there. You got something I don't have.
Hey, humble brag, you know. It is. I was coming off the bench, just the guy that I was really good free throw shooter. I mean, you know, it's whatever. I wish I could still play. I just can't afford getting hurt with these. I got some small ankles, man. They're not, those things aren't built for longevity.
I got some broad ankle braces if you really want to scratch the itch.
Yeah. There you go. There's another plug. I said your brother's my full-time shooting coach. I have been made aware that you are the full-time shooting coach for Justin Thomas. And I apologize because he's like a 12 handicap when it comes to shooting the basketball. He shoots knuckle pucks. I mean, it's never online. And I know you have your work cut out for you as a coach.
Oh, I do. Once I established that as my role, once he sent his first video of his shot, I'm going to look at my phone and see how long the breakdown I sent back was. We got a lot to work on. Like, we can bring that natural athlete out of him. It's just going to take a while. So, you know, kind of like Butch and Ricky Fowler this year, there's always a way to, you know, get him back to, you know, a place where he can, you know, go to any YMCA, any men's league when it's all said and done. And where I would say be at a spot where I would show up with him and be like, yeah, he's with me.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't have that being a shooting coach and he's throwing it over the backboard. I give him credit. He's getting better, but it's definitely, he definitely was starting from not a great position before he sent you that video, I will say.
He's putting the time in though. He's committed. That's what I love.
I love it. And that's the way he is, man. He's wired. When he puts his mind at something, he doesn't stop till he figures it out. And I think that's how all of us athletes are when it comes to something competitive. And I also talked to one of my other buddies, Jordan Spieth, and he said that y'all had one amazing round of golf, played with you, your brother, Jordan, and Kevin Plank for the Under Armour and Barack Obama. Can you confirm this for me? Did Jordan really ask President Obama if aliens exist?
I can't confirm. Yes, I can. That was an amazing, is like when you get time with the 44th president of the United States, I would be ashamed if you didn't ask that question. That's like, I mean, you gotta shoot your shot, right? That's what we were talking about. So yeah, Jordan was an amazing host. Both him and Seth were our members of beautiful Dallas National.
Great spot.
Great track. And so yeah, Kevin Plank, President Obama were there in the group, and it was just amazing to be in that kind of company. I think,
what was the match? And I heard maybe Obama made the winning putt for whatever team he was
did.
On.
He did. He made the winning putt. It was me and President Obama, and then KP and Jordan. So I was his biggest fan that day. He's a nice smooth lefty. He's got a really good putting show. The long game could use some work. He knows that, but hopefully he's in his free time that he's had these last, you know, what, four or five years that he's gotten a little bit better.
I'm sure he's dialed. I'd love to play with President Obama one day. I'm sure he is smooth. I've seen that action. I'm sure that was a fantastic day. But we kind of talked about it at the top that you were in Las Vegas for the match. You played in one before, you're 0-1, played with Peyton Manning, and unfortunately you went down to Philly Mickelson and Big Chuck Charles Barkley. So what why is it going to be different this time? Why do you think you can take down Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes playing with your teammate Klay Thompson?
Well, first off, you are correct, and my record is 0-1. Basketball IQ and, you know, just being a point guard vision, that's my biggest strength. And for whatever reason, I just couldn't read the situation right with the last match. Like, of course I want to play in the match. Of course I'd love to team up with Peyton Manning, but I don't know why in the hell I went to Phil Mickelson's course in Tucson, Arizona, that he knows like the back of his hand. We agreed to alternate shot, which is the dumbest thing to do for two amateurs trying to actually compete. And then we just sat quietly and while they let, you know, Chuck tee off on the red tees every hole, and Phil's just yelling on a par five, like, "Hey, Chuck, hit the seven iron in the middle of the fairway." So he has like a nice five iron, and a five iron to y'all is like, you know, a wedge to us in that kind of scenario. So we got hustled. That's what I'm trying to say. We got hustled to the fullest. I hate it, but we're here to redeem ourselves this year. So me and Klay, our chemistry is obviously, you know, second to none on the court. We can bring it to the course. I like that we, you know, picked our opponents wisely with two guys that have really solid games, but they're unproven on the golf course. So I think, you know, the getting should be good out there. And we got the format right, which should be fun to watch one, and, you know, a little easier to kind of manage, you know, playing golf live in front of the world. So I'm excited about it. And obviously in Vegas, there's a lot of good energy here. So
the format is you pick the best drive and then you just play from there. Is that basically how it goes? Or is there any handicap component to it?
There's no handicap. And it has been confirmed that we are doing a true scramble the entire way. So,
oh, great. That's great for Klay.
Yeah. Great for Klay. Changed my strategy a little bit once we got that news. And I think, you know, we got our last little bit of game planning. Should be fun. I told him, man, just, you know, I'm going to hit some bad shots. We're going to hit some good shots. But if he tees it up and we can see the ball and, you know, it's on the same hole that we're playing, I like where we're at, because I'm just going to grip it and rip it and take a lot of chances and see if we can hit some good shots. Should be hopefully a lot of birdies. And I think that's what everybody wants to see. Nobody wants to see us struggling, you know, hacking out of the woods and just limping through each hole. But it should be fun for everybody to watch on Thursday.
Yep, that's going to be on at 6:30 tonight on TNT. And you just got to find a way to get whatever the equivalent of a corner three on the golf course for Clay. You just get whatever that is. If it's a 15 foot right to left putt, like you just got to get him there and it is game over, man. Cause he's like making that.
I like that. Right? Yeah. Unless if I can't, you know, if we're around the green short game, whatever, that's definitely how we're going to be talking, you know, in that kind of lingo.
Well, you played against Chuck. I mean, talk about, have you figured out how you're going to mute Chuck when you're playing golf tomorrow now?
I was doing a practice round and we had the earpieces in and all that. So I got really good with the pull out, put back in earpiece, pull the earpiece out, put it back in. And then I hear that. When I hear that, that's just
chunk it. Man, that's incredible. I look forward to watching that. And kind of it's just in the future in golf for you. You're an investor in the TGL, which is the new golf league started by Tiger and Rory. You've invested a ton in Howard's golf program, who I got to be the analyst for them winning at Shoal Creek in the PGA of America Works event, which they absolutely won. I think they won like 70 shots. It was insane. And then also you launched Underrated Golf Tour to create, you know, a bunch of different opportunities for underserved communities. You know, why is the investment for you in this next generation, you know, of golf so important to you?
I mean, it starts with just what we all know, you know, the world of golf and the experience of golf, what it can do in terms of bringing people together, what it can do for, you know, amazing experiences. It can take you to all different types of places around the world. Whether you're playing or whether you're in the business of golf, there are so many opportunities that, you know, not a lot of kids that we're trying to serve know about. And so we're trying to give them the vision of what's possible. You know, the North Star is, and it's what Howard University is and the golf program there is about. You know, we're creating scholarships for these student athletes to come be a part of an amazing program, you know, get an education, but pursue golf at the highest level. We know the numbers. We know it's extremely hard to, you know, make it to the PGA Tour, the LPGA Tour, and we want, you know, some more representation on those tours. But throughout that process, we're giving these, you know, these kids the skill sets to be successful in life, no matter what they decide to do, and instilling confidence for them on that front. So golf can be a conduit to, you know, equity, access, and opportunity across the board. And for me, you know, I have so much fun playing the game, but I also know how blessed I am that I had a dad that introduced it to me. I could get clubs, I could get coaching, I had access to, you know, golf courses. And that's not a given for everybody. So if I can do my small part and through, you know, the things that you mentioned to one, continue to make golf fun, cool, accessible, to, you know, give kids opportunities to get out there and at earlier ages, get clubs in their hand, then that's what I want to be a part of. And I wanted to start early because I know this is a lifelong journey of trying to grow the game. I know that's an overused saying, but it really is, you know, a way that we can, you know, leverage golf and what it brings to what it's brought to my life, to many, many other kids.
Well, I love that you're putting your words into action and in all those endeavors. It's really cool to see for the game of golf. And when you talk about growing the game, you're doing it, man. And it's really fun to see all the, you know, a guy like you being in the golf space is so great for our game in a place where, you know, there is less access in other places. So this Underrated Golf tour is going to be something I'm going to be tuned into and hope to be involved with down the road. But you've got a match to win tonight, man. I'm going to be cheering for you at 6:30 Eastern on TNT. I'm going to probably pour me a little cocktail and watch you boys get that dub. But yes, man, thank you again for coming on, man. You inspire me. You inspire that next generation, and keep doing you, man. And you're welcome on anytime.
I appreciate it. Hopefully I'll come back with, I don't know, what we get, a belt, a trophy, or whatever it is for the match, this victory you're about to have. But yeah, I'll definitely come back and we can talk about how it went.
Yeah, man.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all.
What a fun conversation with Steph. So great of him to take the time ahead of the match tonight. And be sure to check that out at 6:30 on TNT. Hope y'all enjoy that. Plus all the action at Detroit Golf Club this weekend at the Rocket Mortgage Classic. And we'll be back here on Monday with a full recap. Thanks for listening and see you then. The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.